Hello. I'm glad you're joining me in the Whispering Gallery for the story of time-warping stone ships from the Nordic Bronze Age and Viking Age. It's part magic and all monument from the time of yore, and the loosely called fleet of heroic stone ships demonstrate the lasting creativity of those who made them. There's a bit of news about the podcast at the end of the episode if you want to stay and listen in. It's just me now. The motivation behind starting the Whispering Gallery podcast was to keep learning about art after I finished art school. And by the way, during this episode, the studio dogs Boomer and Shotzi are here with me working on treats, so you may hear them crunching on occasion, but hopefully that will be to a minimum. A few years ago, I came across a photo in a book that showed large, what appeared to be standing stones, boulders that had been set upright, gathered one after another and set into the outline of a large ship. In the pages of the book, the stone ship rests, nestled in a clearing surrounded by pine tree guardians, where the grasses grow right up against the stones, breaking like calm seas and wispy dry strands. The stone ship, voyaging through time in the book, is located on the island of Gotland in the Baltic Sea. Gotland is off the coast of mainland Sweden. And the book is called The Atlas of Legendary Places by James Harper and Jennifer Westwood. The book continues to explain that while the country of Sweden reaches clear up and into the Arctic Circle, the weather in Gotland, surrounded by the Baltic Sea, somehow allows roses to bloom in December. I'm in Utah, well south of Gotland, and our roses stop blooming in October. So how does that work? Greenhouses? Between the stone ships and winter roses, it sounds like a magical place to me. The photo of red roses on Instagram, coincidentally, is from July. I'm going to read to you from the book The Atlas of Legendary Places on page 106. The largest island in the Baltic Sea, Gotland is sometimes called the Island of Roses, since its climate is temperate enough for roses to bloom in December. Gotland has also been proposed as the site of legendary Atlantis, perhaps because it has been fabulously rich in the past, and still is idyllic. Few places so small, about 80 miles long and half as wide, have such a range of landscape. Dense forests and rolling fields, rugged cliffs and sandy beaches, and in a few places can be found such an array of historical remains. The island has about 400 Bronze Age stone mounds, or cairns, and 350 ship graves, 70 Iron Age forts, and 100 or more Romanesque and Early Gothic churches. Let's stop for a moment to consider what would become of an explorer setting forth and finding new lands across oceans and seas. That would take a good amount of courage, even if you knew where you were going. From what I have learned, Vikings weren't all raids and attacks. They were aware of conservation and were careful how they foraged for food. They used their resources with care, and things were handed down within a family. They were explorers, and also trade was important to them. Like with Eric the Red. My husband was named for Eric the Red. We don't know if they added that story later, but he's fourth generation from a family of Danish immigrants. Eric the Red moved to Iceland when he was about 10, when his father was exiled. Years later, Eric was exiled from Iceland for 3 years for a dispute with his neighbor that got messy. Lives were lost. Eric the Red is known for settling the first colonies in Greenland. 14 of 25 boats made it. It was spun as being a place that was better to live in than Iceland. And his name, the Red, may have been about the color of his hair. From what I could find, the location of Eric the Red's body is unknown and not associated with a stone ship. Welcome to the Whispering Gallery. My name is Suzanne Nikolaisen, and I love learning about the unbelievable in the art world and sharing the stories with you. If you've never seen a stone ship, you can pause here if you'd like and see what they look like on our Instagram page. Look for the Whispering Gallery podcast. I've posted some photos of the stone ships, land art, and roses from Gotland. Our first step in our voyage is to head north to where the stone ships were created. Grab your hot cocoa and hang on. The timeline of when the stone ships were created ranges from 1000 BC to 1000 AD, varying a bit on who's doing the researching and talking about it. The Bronze Age was 3000 to 1200 BC. The Viking Age was 793 AD to 1066. The Cambridge Dictionary definition of standing stones is a tall stone put in a vertical position by people in prehistoric times, the period before there were written records. Given that the stone ships crossed from the Bronze Age to the Viking Age, I'm not sure when Viking writing started. Note, depending on who you're reading the facts from, 500 to 1000 BC could be when the stone ships started. The Wikipedia entry on Vikings says the Norse of the Viking Age could read and write and used a non-standardized alphabet called Runor, built upon sound values. While there are few remains of runic writing on paper from the Viking era, thousands of stones with runic inscriptions have been found where Vikings lived. They are usually in memory of the dead. So in following this rabbit hole, Bronze Age started 5,020 years ago-ish. I'm no archaeologist, but to the layperson, me, and my super sleuthing skills, it looks like the stone ships are standing stones. Now, the outlines of stone ship megaliths, again, am I using the right term? A megalith, as per Britannica.com, is a huge, often undressed stone used in various types of Neolithic, New Stone Age, and Early Bronze Age monuments. So the stone ships are part of Viking burial customs, monuments, grave or cremation. The stone ships number in the hundreds, and they seem to fit into a category of art that was neatly labeled in the 60s to 70s as earth art or land art. But the thing is, people have been making earth art for so much longer than that. As an example among many, the Nazca Line geoglyphs, 1 through 700 CE, these are enormous line drawings that you can identify from the air or from the foothills near the desert in southern Peru. Due to the angle change, you won't see the same thing from the ground as you will from the sky, when you can see the whole of the line drawing head on. The contour line drawing of the Nazca hummingbird, for example, at over 300 feet when compared to a 3-plus inch size hummingbird in real life is pretty awesome. So what is earth art? Tate.org states, land art was part of the wider conceptual art movement in the 1960s and 70s. The most famous land artwork is Robert Smithson's Spiral Jetty of 1970, an earthwork built out into the Great Salt Lake in USA. Though some artists, such as Smithson, used mechanical earth-moving equipment to make their artworks, other artists made minimal and temporary interventions in the landscape, such as Richard Long, who simply walked up and down until he had made a mark in the earth. Now, I've been out to the Spiral Jetty, and it's a pretty cool spiral of rocks out at the Great Salt Lake. It's kind of a four-wheel drive trip to get out there. We took our dachshund with us, and it's a kind of a cool place to clamber around on the rocks, and right when I went, the lake was low, and so we were able to walk out amongst the spiral and kind of explore a little bit. I've seen pictures of it, though, when the lake was higher and the stones were submerged, or looked like they were. That's kind of a neat thing to look up. You can see a picture of it on our Instagram page. So back to our time-traveling Viking stone ships. They have large stones tucked in neatly together one after another, with larger stones set at the stern and bow. Some are cobbled, the outline of the ship being filled with stones. The idea scholars have noted being that the ship would give the dead either something they had while alive, and also maybe help them to get where they're going after death. It seems that the Egyptians weren't the only ones preparing for the afterlife. The First Step Pyramid being built 2780 BC, and the Bronze Age starts at 3000 BC. These two groups, among many other worldwide cultures, were thinking about what was going to happen after death. Now I've mentioned Gotland, which is the largest of around 8 islands off the coast of Sweden, surrounded by the Baltic Sea. The thing is that our stone ship in Gotland is not the only one. You'll find that there are more stone ships in Norway, Denmark, Sweden, and on Gotland, Finland, Germany, and Latvia. I came across one in Japan, but I believe that's an entirely different story after looking it up. Norway is located on the Scandinavian peninsula and is along the side facing the wide-open Atlantic Ocean, while Sweden borders the Baltic Sea on the other side. Quoting Britannica.com, the greatest deeps in the Baltic lie off the southeast coast of Sweden between Nykoping and the island of Gotland, where a depth of 1,506 feet, 459 meters. So please excuse my pronunciation if I totally blow it. Harper and Westwood explain the stone ships further in the Atlas of Legendary Places. It's a very handy book to have. Let me read to you from page 108. These symbolic memorials in which standing stones were set in the outline of elegant ships with high prows and raking lines. In Bronze Age art, ships, wagons, and the sun disk, symbol of the Scandinavian sky god, were common motifs. The wagon is thought to symbolize the sun's journey across the sky by day, the ship its journey by night, when the sun seemed to sink into the sea. By association, the ship came to represent the soul's journey to the land of the dead. The island is littered with these ship graves, which are often found in peaceful glades. Some are huge, such as the one in Gnisvard, south of Visby, which is 140 feet long and 23 feet wide. Big or small, the graves are among the most poignant of all the works of ancient man. Soul ships, voyaging hopefully on, bearing their precious cargo. The Vikings, also known as Norsemen or Northmen, came from Norway, Sweden, and Denmark. Who else would bring us these lasting stone ships from the Nordic Bronze Age? Tough and resourceful, considerate of their resources, courageous, and from what I've learned, may have been more principled than they're given credit for. If you subscribe to PBS, you can look up Wild Way of the Viking by Nova. It's narrated by Ewan McGregor, and a quote from that was pretty memorable. Take what you need, value it as long as you can. That documentary is very powerful. It shows a herd of reindeer being hunted and how they have some survival techniques to confuse the hunters or to delay the hunting. It showed cross-country skiing as a way of transportation. My grandmother would use cross-country skiing up in Idaho to get to school. That seems like a different way of sending your kid off to school, but if you're from Scandinavian descent, maybe it's just what you do. Modern-day Scandinavia, I learned a little bit about them just as I was trying all my different ways of researching. I listened to a class or lecture on great courses and learned about John T. Law, which came from a book, more a modern read, or 1900s, I believe. Modern-day Scandinavia, I have learned about during my research, many seem to respect John T. Law, and it's J-A-N-T-E. If you haven't heard about this, and I hadn't, here's what Wikipedia says about it. There are 10 rules in the law as defined by Sandermos, all expressive of variations on a single theme, and usually referred to as a homogeneous unit. You are not to think you are anyone special, or that you're better than us. I learned about this on the Great Courses Plus lecture. Equal rights for all extending to understated clothing, no matter your wealth. The teacher had an example of a man who had a really nice Rolex, but had taken the watch to get the band replaced with a leather band as a more modest way of wearing his Rolex, not showing off. An interesting aside to Scandinavia. This affects everything from punctuality to time off with a new baby. They want you to show up on time. Basically, it shows respect for all of the people around you and their lives and what they have going on and need to do, as well as they respect the new families with the new baby. And from what I understand, between a husband and wife, you can take up to 3 years off, which was kind of cool to hear, that support for those families. What would our own countries be like with this kind of consideration for others? I know there are some people that criticize this, but as a whole, it seems like it's kind of been folded into the way of life. You are not to think you are anyone special or that you're better than us. The magic of the stone ships just captured me when I first saw them, and that they are in so many neighboring countries. Add the roses on Gotland. This is not such a spooky episode, but rather an unusual episode about land art that was really interesting to research, and I know there's a ton of related information about art on stones, about the Viking culture, but I had to stop so I can begin researching our next episode. So with that, I share a toast to the creativity of the stone ship monuments and those who made them, the people the stone ships remember, and those who were part of the community who didn't get a stone ship. Skal, because everybody counts. If you really are digging the burial monument stories, you can further geek out by grabbing some popcorn and watching The Dig on Netflix, based on a true story in the UK. So here's what they say about it. The Dig was made in 2021, is PG-13, and is an hour and 52 minutes. Quote, on the eve of World War II, a British widow hires a self-taught archaeologist to dig up mysterious formations on her land, leading to a staggering find. It was a really great story to watch, so you might really enjoy that. It's kind of exciting and a little bit of underdog fighting to make it. It's just a great story, and what they find is pretty amazing. And it's said to be based on a true story. Thank you so much for joining me. And if you enjoy the spooky art stories, be sure to subscribe to the podcast. And you can go back to our previous seasons to listen to the stories of art and dragons, UFOs, the Kraken, Van Gogh, and Monet. It would be great if you share the podcast with your friends and family so they can join us as we dive into these crazy, interesting tales. And if you have any ideas for future episodes, let me know. Please DM me on Instagram. If you want to show your Whispering Gallery support, or you just like the spooky side of things, get a hold of our little enamel pen on our Etsy store. It's our cute skull I've named Lucy. Yes, that Lucy. It would make an unusual tie pin, or add some sass to your favorite jacket or bag. Look for it on Etsy with the keywords Whispering Gallery, Lucy Skull Pin. And I am new to using Etsy and selling things, and there are more than one pin available, but it shows that there's only one. The shop says it will reset after each sale, and meanwhile, I'll try to get that figured out shortly in case you want to order more than one. Many thanks to Wikipedia, Wikimedia, Khan Academy, Britannica.org, Netflix, Great Courses, Google, Atlas Obscura, and, of course, the book The Atlas of Legendary Places by James Harper and Jennifer Westwood. So look for the Whispering Gallery on Instagram and Twitter. I'm a little more active on Instagram. Please comment on Instagram to join the conversation. I'd love to hear from you. Working alone in the studio, then adding the pandemic, if you're anything like me, it can feel kind of isolating, or very isolating. Hang in there, friends. Keep your masks handy and stay safe, and keep working on your art and creativity. This is the third year of How Our Seasons Go, of the Whispering Gallery, and some things have changed. Our co-host, Emily, my daughter, has decided to focus on her silversmithing and is leaving the podcast. I can't say how much I'll miss working on this podcast with her, but please check out at wreath.of.avs.silver to see her work and to support her. And avs is spelled A-V-E-S. Again, that's at wreath, period, of, period, avs, A-V-E-S, period, silver, on Instagram. So, going forward, we, you and me, we'll continue to explore the stories of art that are strange and spooky, as we already have with cursed gems and deep-sea cryptids in our past seasons. Images and quotes were used with credit to the authors under fair use. I am keeping the podcast ad-free currently, so we can just tell the stories, and it's a passion project, so I'm not making money on it. It's just me looking up stories and sharing them, and they're incredible stories about amazing artwork. I will talk to you soon again. I'm going to start working on the next episode. Stay safe and healthy, and enjoy the extraordinary stories from the art world.